Hi, and welcome to the Fundraising Leadership Podcast, episode 23. I'm Janice Cunning.
And I'm David Langiuli. And Janice, today we have a special guest on the podcast from Georgia. It's Paul Kinzia. Hi, Paul.
Hey, how are you?
Good, good. Let me introduce Paul to our audience. So Paul and I met a little over a year ago in Miami, of all places. And we met, like, I remember this very distinctly, Paul, like, because we were at a jiu-jitsu tournament and we're both blue belts in the Master 5 division. And so, you know, you weigh in and they lead you out to the mat. And Paul is walking next to me and he says, hey, David, you know, just want to say, like, I'm not out here to kill anybody, and I hope you're not either.
True story.
I was like, I'm cool with that, Paul. I'm good with that, too. So anyway, yeah. Actually, we had a great match. Paul defeated me in that match. I think it was 2-0, Paul, right?
I don't remember the score.
Or 4-0. Okay, something like this.
See, David, you remember because you were on the losing end of that.
That's literally how it works, right? You don't remember your wins, but you do remember your losses.
It's so true. I can viscerally remember all of my losses, and the wins are just like, oh, okay.
As long as I'm not on some list in like his bedroom of people I want to execute, Paul Kinzia, I will seek my revenge.
Well, the good news is that I actually went down a division to fight Paul in that tournament. You're a Master 4, as I recall.
Spring
and
chicken.
Now, what's that?
Spring chicken.
Spring chicken, yes. And I am actually moving up. I'll be moving up to Master 6. So I'm an old codger. And Paul is currently ranked. Are you ranked number 1 in the world now? Or are you
number
still number
2. Two? Number 2.
Wow.
And closing in. So I did not fight Paul this past October in Miami, and I did see him there. We both fought in our divisions, and Paul shared with me a copy of his new book called Master Jiu-Jitsu, Master Your Life. It's not what we're really here to talk about, but for any of you in the audience who are interested in jiu-jitsu and how the art can inform your whole life, I highly, highly, highly recommend this book. It's really a book that follows on to Paul's other two books about mastering your life. And jiu-jitsu is just one vehicle for it. So why don't you mention the other two books that you have written and published, Paul?
I have Secrets to Breakthrough Wealth. I'm a wealth manager by trade. I graduated with an accounting degree. I have an MBA in corporate finance, and I'm a wealth manager. So I've been in financial planning for about 2.5 decades. So the first book was right up my alley, Secrets to Breakthrough Wealth. And then I have this secondary passion, which is health and wellness. And that became very important to me for my own self-interest and for my clients' self-interest. And I followed that first book up with 30 Days to Better Health. And it's just a practical guide to help people make that transition over to a healthier lifestyle. Because what's the reality? We're all super busy. We're all inundated with noise. And it's really easy to get distracted on the wrong things. And also, what's the reality? We all want quick fixes. We all want the instant, give me a pill, give me a pill, give me a pill, give me a potion, give me a lotion. But what ends up happening is, you know, with our healthcare system, it's a little profit motive in there. And at the end of the day, America and starting to be around the world, we're just not healthy. And
yeah,
wanted to do
well, I love what you're saying about health and wellness. I want to bring in, you are an investment manager, and that's one of the reasons why we wanted to have you on the podcast to talk about some of your work with wealthy donors and what you see with nonprofit organizations, because you've been on the intersection of that for many years. And you wrote a really, really thoughtful blog post on the Fundraising Leadership website that we really appreciated, that talked about how important leadership and legacy and the long view, the three L's, I guess we could say, of all of. So share with us a little bit about what you see, you know, the short-termism versus long-termism, what you see with donors and their reaction to that.
Sure. Nothing breaks my heart as a finance guy sitting in a charitable philanthropy or fundraising meeting when it's usually the smaller mid-size organizations. They're trying to solicit funds. They're trying to better their organizations, and they're doing things that undermine themselves in their own success and potential in these meetings. And what it becomes clear very early in these fundraising meetings with my wealthy clients, and I'm sure plenty of others, is they're not communicating their or clarifying their leadership, their vision, and their organization structure that revolves around this leadership. And there's a disconnect now that is right off the bat in these meetings. And I could even predict, I could say, they're not going to get a dime from my client. I could just tell the first 5 minutes, it's not going to happen. They're not communicating right. So they're not in a position where they're putting themselves in the shoes of the wealthy donor. So when we take a step back, let's do that. Let's take a step back and we think, imagine for a moment, you're the wealthy donor. And it's usually because you were an entrepreneur or you built up some organization or you have some maybe political leadership skills yourself. These are leaders. They accomplished things not over a week, not over a month or a quarter or a year. It's not just even multiple years. It's multiple decades. It took them to create their wealth, their leadership, their legacy. If you go back to the common denominators of success, in most successful people, it's because they did have a long-term vision of what they wanted to accomplish. And this gets back to what we just talked about in healthcare. Healthcare isn't about taking a pill. It's about a long-term process and executing on principles. So when we get back to these wealthy donors, they have this mindset. That is who they really are. That is what they practiced over their lifetime. Now it just happens that they're entering perhaps a new phase of life that is geared more towards them focusing on other areas, charitable, giving, philanthropy, making an impact in a different way. So now when these organizations are coming to them, and we have to remember, wealthy people are always being approached with people with their hand out. And it's not to tap them on the back or shake their hand. It's, I want money, right? This is the reality of where we're at. And there's nothing wrong with that. Everybody needs money to fulfill their mandates. But if you're this wealthy person and you constantly have people extending their hand out saying, I want your money, I want your money, then we need to say, well, if you were this wealthy person, what would you be looking for before you part with your legacy dollars? Or what would make you stroke the check or keep the check, right?
So I'm curious. Yeah, go ahead, Janice.
Well, I love to follow how you were saying, like, you can tell in the first 5 minutes of that meeting. What do you wish those charity leaders were saying or doing?
So right off the bat, if we imagine, and I don't know how many of your listeners are on more the sales side or the fundraising side, but in an organization, any organization, it doesn't matter if it's Coca-Cola or any business, there's different functions, right? And one of the functions could be accounting, one could be organization and human resources, one could be, you know, the sales or the fundraising. And one of the things is know your customer. So what becomes evident in a lot of meetings is the organization looking to solicit funds from a wealthy donor does not know their customer. They don't know, they don't ask, what is important to you? What are you seeking to accomplish? So what ends up happening is a couple of things. One, they go right into a pitch that's loaded with statistics or perhaps graphic pictures, right? So it's the old, there's 1,000 starving people in this neighborhood. We need to feed the hungry. I need money. Give me money, right? So, you know, there's X amount of animals that are suffering. There's so much pollution. We need to cure the pollution. Like, there's all these problems that the world has and will have, and people want to solve those things. So the first thing they do is they skip over what's important to the donor, and they go right into this statistical or graphic picture pitch. And the second thing is they make the initial pitch all about sort of that the organization being the hero. Mm-hmm. And what they fail to recognize is you want to make the donor the hero, because that's what the reality is. The organization is just a conduit to solving the problem that is important to solve. So whether we're trying to make the arts better, improve science, help a university, cure hunger, save healthcare, whatever the problem is, there's people that want to solve that problem. But at the end of the day, if you're a wealthy donor, even if you're donating anonymously, there is this human desire to be the hero, right? Because you're the one parting with the funds.
Yeah. So I'm curious, like, when you've seen it done well, when, like, on an initial meeting that you've been present at with one of your wealthy clients and a nonprofit organization who comes in to speak with your client about a relationship and a donation to the organization, what has worked well?
What has worked well is when the organization has a clear message on the leadership of the organization themselves that can be communicated in a way that makes the donor feel that this is the right place for their funds. Because if you're a wealthy donor and you have this mindset towards long-term infrastructure, long-term thinking, right? Like, successful people don't just put 100% of their focus on solving the problems of the hour, right? Because every day there's problems, right? In all of our lives, personal lives, business lives, nonprofit lives, there's problems. So what happens in our own financial planning? What happens in our own health? What happens in our own organizations? If 100% of our focus is on just solving the problems of the here and now, well, then it strips us of all of our future and future planning and our own legacy and our own self-interest. So this is the best example as a wealth manager I can give is the old proverbial, I'll start doing financial planning when I'm rich. But, well, that, of course you will, right? Because you'll never be rich, which means you'll never do financial planning. So when people are making speeches or setting the tone to eventually solicit funds, right? Because it could be a multi-step process. You're introducing your organization to potential donors. You're clarifying this message. You're clarifying that you have leadership in place that could help the donor solve their problem. The donor has a problem. The donor is running out of time on earth. The donor no longer wants to work 80 hours a week in their factory or in their organization, their tech company. They're past that. They're at the stage where they want to start doing other things, which is giving back. And this is what I tend to say. Leaders seek leaders. Leaders seek leaders who could solve problems. So again, yeah.
I love the distinction that you're making here in this conversation with us, Paul, because Janice and I really formed up fundraising leadership to help leaders in the nonprofit world. And it's, you know, people come to us and they think like, oh, you know, can you teach us how to do fundraising? And we're like, no. I mean, we could, but we choose not to, because there's lots of, like you talked about, you know, there are some skills, we could call them sales skills, we could call them relationship building, whatever you want to call it, right? There are lots of people who do that kind of training out there. This really resonates with us because we believe that you actually have to support leadership within the nonprofit world, which, and there's very little of that. And you're giving voice in the meetings that you've had when people come in to that lack of leadership. And very wealthy donors want to know that their legacy, the impact they're going to have, will be go forward in time. Correct. And that requires leadership.
Isn't that what they're trying to accomplish? Because what is going through, again, let's use our imagination. So we're gonna put our dream cap on. Wealthy donors are usually not the young Mark Zuckerbergs, right? We might pick up on that as the example, but that's not the typical wealthy donor. The wealthy donor is a demographic that is older in age. They're looking to give back. They've already accomplished a lot of wonderful things. So they had to develop their own leadership infrastructure. They know how important it is because they could have never accomplished their own goals had they not had the assistance of others. So they're very big into leadership. Now they have a problem. What is their problem? The problem is they start to recognize they're not going to be on Earth forever, right? They built this wealth, but now they're going to be gone. And now they want to make an impact in a different way. They're not putting all their effort into making even more and more money. They've turned that over to a new leadership team at their old organization, right? Because why? They're retired. They're doing philanthropy work. They're doing charitable work. They're giving in other ways. So their mindset is shifting. And what are they constantly thinking about? Not just how I could feed someone tomorrow, but how I can make a difference after I'm gone, because that's what's really that's their problem. They're going to be gone, and now they want to make a lasting impact after they're gone, whether it's with their family, right? Because wealthy families do estate planning. How am I going to pass on some wealth to my own children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren? How do I put in trust, right? These are very common things that wealthy people do. They build trust for their own family. But now what they do is they're interested in giving to other organizations that could help them solve their problems. So now they have their own desires based on what they like. They like to solve animal issues or health issues or arts. They might be into the arts, or they might be into the sciences or to education, right? There's common things that we could put buckets that charities fall into, right? Science, arts, health, humanitarian. Now what we're trying to do is imagine we're trying to solve a problem because we're passionate about animal rescue or whatever our cause is. And now we're communicating this message to a wealthy donor that resonates with them, that we have the leadership, right? Because we've already now got the aha, the epiphany that leaders seek leaders, that we're pitching to a leader. Mm-hmm. Right? That's what we're doing when we go into this fundraising meeting. Mm-hmm. We are pitching to a leader that has proven their leadership. That's how they accumulated this wealth. So now, wouldn't it make sense that we clarify our own message as an organization that helps this leader understand that we have leadership in place? And
I think you're teeing up something for the audience here. Well, that's what I'm hearing. Like, yeah. I think you actually want to, I'm hearing almost a challenge here. So what do you want to, because you know, we talked about this before we got on the podcast, we always like to give the audience something to put into practice and try. So what do you want to challenge the audience to do?
I want to challenge the audience to not just talk about it, create the actual leadership at your own organization that focuses on the long term. You may think, well, I'm not big enough to start an endowment. But in financial planning, we would say save 10%. In religions across the world, they say tithe 10%, right? 10%. Pay yourself first. Get your organization focused on the long term. Get your leadership set up for the long term. Actually do it. That's step one. And then two, clarify this message. So the next time you are in meetings with potential donors that could make large contributions to an endowment fund that maybe you haven't even begun yet, you now have this clarified message that can communicate to this leader that you have the leadership in place to act responsibly to help them solve their problem, because they have a problem and you're going to help them solve it.
Yeah, I love that. I think that leaders seek leaders. That's like really, let's all take that in, you know, and you have to carve out that time as a leader of a nonprofit to really be thinking about the long term and making sure, first of all, that you know what that long term is, and then making sure that you're able to articulate that. So I really love that. Thanks, Paul. And I'd love to give Paul, if you, and we're going to put everything in the show notes, we'll link to your blog and your website, but just let people know kind of how they can find out more about you.
You could find out more about me in two ways. I run a wealth management firm called Kinsey Investments. It's in Atlanta, Georgia, but I serve clients across the United States. So Kinsey Investments, it's K-I-N-D as in David, Z-I-A, investments.com. My passion project, the health and wealth and debt-free living, is simply my name, paulkinsey.com. You could follow me on Instagram or Facebook.
I want to pause it there for a moment, because the health, wellness, health, wealth, and well-being aspect of what you do really resonates, I think, with our audience. I know in the nonprofit world, people work as hard, if not harder, than those in the corporate world. I mean, you know, I think lots of long hours for sometimes pay that doesn't even match up. They're passion-driven people.
That's right.
And what I love about your personal project is that, you know, folks in the nonprofit world need to look after their own wealth and well-being also. So absolutely. I would encourage members of our audience. I mean, this is some of what Janice and I do as coaches. You know, we work with the whole person, not just their leadership, but we work on all aspects of their lives. And I'm so gratified to, you know, this is like an aspect of you that I didn't know when we met, that you really help people achieve their well, lead better lives, really.
It is. So it's leading better lives.
That. Yeah, just want to acknowledge you for that. And of course, I want to thank you for your friendship, and I want to appreciate you for putting out into the world this wonderful book on Master Your Life, Master Jiu-Jitsu, Master Your Life. There are lots of great stories in that book, and it is really a book about how to lead an inspired life. And you tell a lot of stories about jiu-jitsu. So for those in the audience who are interested in that, I do encourage them to pick up your book, which is very, very good.
I appreciate that.
Is there anything else you want to say before we sign off, Paul?
You know what? I would just like to provide encouragement, because everybody at times feels like the struggle is real, right? The struggle is real. The struggle personally, the struggle on our health, the struggle on our finances, the struggle in our organizations. You know, social media has a funny way of distorting our perceptions of reality. Everybody's a big shot on social media. But I could tell you, behind the scenes, even working with people that have accomplished amazing things, the struggle is real. And everybody has hard days. Everybody is tempted to have the cheesecake. Everybody likes the cookies, especially coming up around the holidays. But what we have to do is, you know, determine our own principles, focus on our own goals, and just sort of fight the good fight. So if you're out there in an organization, like David said, it's just like, man, I'm just working so hard and I'm not getting paid a lot of money, and it's just passion projects. It's like, fight the good fight, because the world needs you. The world needs your message. The world needs your problem solving skills, and the world needs your leadership now more than ever.
Yes.
So that's just, I just want to provide encouragement that if at times you feel The struggle is real. It's okay.
All right, Paul. Well, it was great being with you today. Thank you so much. Anything else, Janice?
I think, you know, it just struck me that, you know, December is fast approaching, and I love Paul. Like, it feels like end of the year, beginning of the new year, like the perfect time to take on the challenge you're giving people to, like, really look at the long term. So we say, like, go put it into practice.